listening to Words and Nerds, talking to your favorite authors.
You're here with Chris and Danny listening to Words and Nerds. Today we welcome Sydney author Peter Wilson discussing the first novel from the Jack Gregson series, Jack Gregson and the Forgotten Portal.
Peter, welcome to the podcast.
So you're originally from Sydney, and I love a little bit about your bio in the book, which is it lives in Sydney with his wife and dog. Was the dog happy to get a shout out?
Oh, I think she's in the photo as well, so yes, yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, so the dog
is a very big part of our life.
The dog is the superstar of the bio. Obviously, it says in the biography as well that your background is a lot of digital media.
More video-based, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting for me that video-based and video and digital media, and yet here we are discussing your book, which I really enjoy that sort of branching out. Is one sort of more natural to you than the other?
Well, I love movies, so I guess when I write, it's sort of in the style of kind of fast-paced and sort of quick. So, yeah, they're both very different formats, but I think there's a lot of similarities.
Liking movies, that sort of lends itself more to that sort of short story that sort of grows a little bit more into something more substantial because, as you said, it's that fast pace, it's that quickness and that sort of, you know, what you're used to in your normal media.
There's a need to tell a story too, I think, or to listen to other people's stories. I think that's how they connect.
Yeah, exactly. And also I think I write very dialogue heavy as well. So that sort of translates as well.
It didn't scream out to me as too much dialogue, actually. I thought it was actually quite well balanced. I thought it was a really tight narrative, which is actually one of the first things I wanted to talk to you about the tight narrative structure and the economy of words. And is this your natural style of writing, or did you just edit like 1,000 times?
Both natural to edit. I guess I've done a lot of short stories and a lot of competitions with 200 words, 300 words. One of my favourite competitions was 55-word stories.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, so you end up with a story of 57 words and you're trying to work out what you can delete to actually make it a...
You've really got it Twitter, right?
You can bring Twitter.
If I got Twitter, I'd probably be good at it.
So because the novel was so tightly structured and had this beautiful economy of words, what was your process of writing? Did you edit at the end or did you keep going back and forth and editing? Or did you have someone sort of editing as you're writing? What was your process for that?
There's a lot of back and forth. So by the time I had finished the novel, I kind of reread it again and I didn't have to change a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a constant process. You're always changing one little thing. Even when you read the hard copy now, I want to change.
Too late, published.
I have heard that. Art is never finished. It's just put aside. You know, it's never actually complete.
Exactly.
And what about each chapter? I was on a train, which is a luxury for me with two little children. So I was like devouring this book. And I took the long train and I was like, I don't even care. This train's taking 20 minutes longer. But I kept reading on because every chapter was almost like a cliffhanger for the next one. I was like, oh, just one more, just one more. Do you plan out your chapters in that way or do you go back to try and have that hook at the end of your chapters?
I was always able to find a hook at the end. I mean, some of them are not, you know, great cliffhangers, as you say. Some are bigger than others, but yeah, no, I always had a hook plan for each one.
Is that a little bit going back to the film interest as well, where there's, you know, the peaks and troughs of the movie and, you know, you need that little bit of a hook to get to that next scene and things like that?
Yeah, and TV shows, and the ad break at TV shows, you always need a hook.
Absolutely. Yeah, a hook, somebody dying if you're Game of Thrones. You know, that's the way this runs.
Yeah, exactly.
When did your characters emerge? So Jack, David and Rosie are the three main protagonists, Jack obviously being the namesake of the book. When did these characters emerge? Just from your imagination or people you've met or ideas from other stories?
It originally came from just needing a few characters and three's a certain nice balance to it. But then in terms of personalities, I think David has a cheekiness that I see in my cousins. Jack's a bit of a straight man, sort of level-headed thinker. So just seeing what I've seen in my cousins and other people.
If you're friends with a writer, you better watch out because you'll always be written somewhere into the story.
It's like a Taylor Swift album.
Oh, jeez.
You'll be in there somewhere.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. Yeah, but then like outro, I guess, I kept thinking of Matt Smith's Doctor Who when I was writing him. So it's sort of like a zany sort of character. Maybe not as over the top, but yeah, it's sort of definitely taking ideas from different areas.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd say drawing from Matt Smith, Doctor Who, you can't go too far wrong.
I knew that.
Yeah, of course I'd say that. As a Who
fan. Yeah, he's great.
The matriarch, it was nice to have a woman in charge. I enjoyed that. But what was the idea behind Grandma being the matriarch of the family?
Why not?
Yeah, well,
that's a good
one. Also, there's sort of an overarching sort of theme in the book and ongoing further on in future books. A lot of the Gregson, the men in the Gregson family kind of being sort of not too very nice people. Mm-hmm. I guess you met a couple, so they're not exactly nice people. And yeah. The idea is sort of Jack deciding to who he wants to be.
Yeah.
So actually, if I had a good, I guess, main manner of the house, you know, owner of the house, as a male, it'd be harder to get that message across.
Yeah, fair enough. Obviously, being called Jack Gregson and the Forgotten Portal, there's a lot about portals. Being transported to different planets.
Well, there may not be a lot about portals because it's the Forgotten Portal.
It's true. But
so not necessarily will it be there.
There was a fair few portals in the novel. And coming, going to different planets, I thought was super cool. I also saw the portal as a symbol of maturation of the characters, almost like a coming of age. Was that your intention or something I read way too deeply in?
Possibly a bit too deeply.
You know what? I've got to say this as the non-English.
Just to be honest.
I'm so pleased you said that. I cannot express the joy from which you just said.
To tell you the truth, I could pretend that I'm that deep.
The next interview, you can say, well, you know what? The portals were.
Yeah, exactly.
Coming back and like, whoa. Or maybe they'll be like, wow.
You know, sometimes the dog in the story is just a dog.
No, it's not. It's always a symbol, something. What I find really cool is the fantasy genre is just so incredibly popular. I don't know if this has always been the case, but I feel like there's this emerging culture or subculture. Maybe Harry Potter's helped, Lord of the Rings, Game of Thrones.
It's the nerds. We're taking over.
It is. You are. It's fantastic. I love it.
Awesome.
What do you think is the reason that fantasy genre, from your perspective, is so popular?
Magic. Escapism, something that's just like a bit fantastical outside of our realm. It's like when I was growing up, some like Amity Feist, magician.
Mm-hmm.
Stories like that I just loved. Mm-hmm. You know, someone that was a bit younger than me going on this massive adventure. Yeah. George R. R. Martin, I love it, but it's like really, you know, it's just the dragons. It could be. You know, like the War of the Roses. So I think there's a lot of romance, murder, intrigue and incest that keep people hooked on that one.
You know what? I think it's fun as well. Like, I really had fun reading this book and I'm currently reading another fantasy book as well, and it's just a lot of fun, you know, and it takes you away from, you know, the seriousness and boredom of being an adult sometimes.
And the other thing is too, I think, personally, is with a lot of fantasies, fantasy always has those core issues at the heart. And those relationships are always at the heart of it. But you don't necessarily always want to read something that's real world to get that message or to get that relationship. So for me, fantasy is good because you still get those messages and those relationships and those positives. But, you know, there's a portal thrown in there somewhere.
And a chaos pixie.
Exactly. Yeah.
Where on earth did the chaos pixie come from?
It's
crazy. So crazy.
Yeah. It took me a while. Like, I'd started building up this great weapon that Jack was holding, and then I just knew that it had to be something good when he actually threw it.
Wrote yourself into a corner.
Yeah, I did. So that one, I finally, I guess I got inspiration. I decided to, you know, take the point of view of the Chaos Pixie, and then it just fell in place.
And that's always
fun to write.
It was fun to read.
It's always the risk that people run sometimes in fantasy is because it's a fantasy novel, they can just throw something up at the end to write their way out of the trouble. But I like the idea of thinking through the puzzle and going, okay, how am I going to write out of this? I know what I'll do. I'll flip that. That's too obvious, too easily in some novels where they just go, you know what, I don't know where to go. let's have something magical happen there.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to know where I can get my hands on a Chaos Pixie. That'd be great.
Yeah, it's fun to write that one.
Yeah, I had fun reading that, actually. And as we were just talking about, fantasy also conveys, you know, humanity. And I found that this book, although it was a lot of fun, it was about kids and magic and portals, I found that there was a sense of real fragility of humanity, especially faced with the grief and love. And Maddox, Jack's father, goes in search of a cure through magic, but it leads him to the dark side. It's a really interesting idea. But I thought, you know, what would it take? It's a question for you. What would it take for you to go to the dark side? It took Maddox trying to, you know, save his family. So is that what humanity, or is everyone going to
cookies?
What would make me cookies? Money.
You two are evil.
Yeah. Not too much money either. No, just joking. Yeah, I don't know. That's a hard question.
It is, isn't it? I just thought sometimes books present more questions than answers, and that's fine too. But I just thought it was really cool. Does everyone have that potential, do you think, to go to the dark side? Does everyone have a price?
Yeah.
I've got a price.
Yeah, well, and that's the sort of question I want to pose to Jack over the next couple of novels, and this one as well. You know, where is he going to go? He's going to get some choices like that.
Mm-hmm. And where's he going to go? And what kind of man is he going to be, become? I think that's readers too. You know, readers his age who are assuming are going to read and enjoy the book are probably on that path as well. Maybe not as much. Hopefully their dads aren't, you know, like his father. Yeah. They're on that journey themselves.
Maybe not as drastic, but yeah.
Drastic, maybe.
And with the concept of a series, for example, how far ahead are you thinking with regards to where characters go?
With the first one, I kind of wrapped it up.
Yeah.
And left like a bit of possibility and a hook at the end. But now that I'm writing the second one, it's I want it to be three. But
as you said, three is a magic number.
Exactly. People like trilogies for some reason.
Yeah, they're popular, aren't they? And I do think that like the next book in this series, this one left us with a few questions, well, many questions. You know, what's the relationship with Grandma and Anthro? What's going to happen to the Shadow Man? And is there hope for the father-son relationship? And is there hope for Maddox? So it left us with lots of questions. Obviously, you don't want to give away too much of what you're heading towards, but what can you tell us about the upcoming series?
Everything you pointed out then.
Sort of like, that was great. So thank you.
Everything you wanted. Yeah, no, it's just exploring more of what, I guess, the characters you've already met, introducing a couple more, and just, exploring some of the things that were left unsaid, specifically the Shadow Man and,
I'm actually really interested in Anthro and what the deal is with him. So that's where I want to go. I liked Anthro, but I'm not convinced he's still the good guy. So I'm not sure. I want to see.
It's a bit grey.
Yeah, it is a bit grey. I'm really interested in that character.
Yeah.
Another interesting idea is when Anthro tells Jack about the punkies, or is it the Grattan? Am I pronouncing Grattan or Grayton? How would you like to pronounce that?
Grattan.
The Grattan. and he says, sometimes I wonder, wouldn't it be better not to care? Your father ran to the darkness to try and save you from someone he'd never met. If we were born into this world not caring for our family, wouldn't life be easy? It's an interesting idea, but that's what makes us human, isn't it? Like, where did this idea come from and what does it say about Anthro?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And Jack's just found out he wants to know heaps more about his family and he's never met them either. So he's posed with the same sort of, not the desperation of his dad, but the same sort of questions. Why do I want to know more about my dad? But Anthro's got a certain coldness to him, I guess.
It is intriguing. I found him actually one of the most intriguing characters, and that's why I want to know more about him. So I thought, where does that come from?
Yeah, no, he's my favourite one to write, and the Chaos Pixie as well.
I was actually about to ask you, are there some characters that you feel that ones you prefer writing to others? I mean, is that thing of when you're writing a book, for example, do you sit there and go, oh, I really like this character, let's get a bit more of a run on going with that one?
Yeah, a little bit like that, and for sure. And I just like how you can get into different zones. So you start writing as someone else and you're like, they kind of, after a while, start speaking to you and kind of go, well, yeah, I want them to say this. And then I go, oh, hang on, they would never say that.
Yeah, so, your headspace goes somewhere else and the next thing you go, yeah, they wouldn't say that, but this character would. Let's go.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like that.
I found a few nods. Maybe it's just me. Look, I read too deeply into everything. I'm sorry in advance. But I found a few nods maybe to Harry Potter with this novel. Was that any intentional, or was it just part and parcel of writing fantasy? Or
it's just so hard to avoid. it's just like I was writing it and I was going, oh, God, this sounds like Star Wars, like Darth Vader. It's like, and like some of the decisions I made were to get away from that. I'd go, oh crap, this sounds too Harry Potter, let's go this direction instead and stuff like that. So I think it's inevitable, but I try to avoid.
Well, I think with fantasy, it's a little bit like, you know, the idea of writing any form of literature and someone going, the Shakespearean element to this, which means, because Shakespeare wrote all of the key basic lines and stories, and with fantasy, it's going to be Harry Potter or Star Wars. If it's a film, it's Star Wars. If it's a book, it's Harry Potter. So you're going to, at some point, bump into those characters. It's just natural as part of what's happening.
Yeah, exactly. And they do, when you look at it a certain way, they do sort of have similar stories.
Yeah, and I mean, they are.
In certain areas.
Things. Yeah, there's elements of, you know, characters sort of making good towards the end. There's elements of that dark versus that good versus dark side struggle. All of those elements, they're just sort of so key to the fantasy genre to start with.
Yeah.
So you can't really avoid them.
No, that's what I thought. Yeah, it's just part of the genre. So many children's books consist of absent, dead, or evil parents. really step parents, like, I'm a parent of young children. I'm reading my son Harry Potter. I read my daughter Cinderella, Sleeping Beauty, Beauty and the Beast, Frozen. I edit a little bit and maybe the parents are like disappeared or missing because they're a little bit small. Why is there such a recurring theme of dead and absent parents? I don't
question?
Know if you have the answer for that, but why did you put it in your
I've got an answer if you don't, but I'll let you answer.
No, I've got a couple. First of all, it's a hell of a lot easier to have a kid running around doing dangerous stuff without his parent behind him going, stop that.
You must be home by dinner.
That's a great
answer. Exactly.
You see that freedom. I actually really like that answer.
Yeah. And I also think it helps you sympathise. I think you want to be sympathetic to your hero sort of thing. Yeah, and it's an easy way to do it. And it's an extreme, but kids find extremes easier to kind of comprehend. Rather than subtlety.
I often think too that a large element of it with fantasy is that it's that idea of the bad home life leads to this fantasy of being somewhere else. And one of those sort of stories is it's that idea of the fantasy of being elsewhere away from what's going on in that real world. And it sort of helps the reader who doesn't really want, as I said before, those real world issues in that way being discussed. Well, you take them out of that automatically by doing it that way.
Yeah. And a few questions just about the process of your writing, and we like to talk about the novel as a whole and your process. You know, known authors who use little cards or use a little program or write heaps of notes everywhere or just start writing a zero draft. What's your process, if you have one?
Zero draft, but I'll it's just a Word document that's backed up about 10 times.
That backing up 10 times is critical.
Yeah, exactly. And I'll start making notes down the bottom as I go. And whether or not the story leads to those notes, I now have sort of know where it's going to end, but how I'm getting there is sort of just a note here or there.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely not graphs and things into the wall or anything like that. It's,
do you find really protective of those zero drafts? Like, do you feel like if someone read my zero draft after, you know, I went missing or something, I'd be so embarrassed? Or do you feel like your zero drafts are pretty spot on already?
I let my sister's a writer, so I let her read it. I don't hand it out to everyone.
It must be good having a sister who's a writer. You can bounce off
it. Yeah, it's handy.
My unusual process question is, do you have any plans like Terry Pratchett to have all your final drafts run over so that no one can reuse them later on?
That's a good idea.
I love that.
That was my favourite writing story, the idea that Terry Pratchett in his will had it said that all of his hard drives must be run over with a steamroller so no one could publish his work after his death.
That's very Terry Pratchett.
It's very Terry Pratchett. It's very genius.
It's a story in itself, isn't it?
Oh, it's great.
And what about your publishing process? I know you said you've written a lot of short stories, which I think is probably good advice for a lot of aspiring writers, but what was your publishing process? Was it like stick it in the slush pile and hope for the best, or did you have a better idea than that, or how did it
come out? Well, when it finished, I self-published it as an e-book.
Yep.
And spent a lot of time campaigning people online to read it for free and give us a review, me a review, stuff like that. So I spent a lot of time trying to get awareness that way. And then I went the usual, send it to Random House and not get a reply and all that stuff.
Random House actually have an outgoing mail? I don't know.
Yeah, it's just like an email address that goes to nowhere.
Every story I've ever heard about people who send a manuscript somewhere like there, for example, the story comes back, never heard back from them. I don't think they just... Yeah.
But isn't it wonderful that you can self-publish now and you can take it into your own hands and then just see, because, you know, it's funny. I mean, as we know, Harry Potter got rejected like 12 or 13 times. It's not always about what the publishing company like. It's about what the people like, right? So isn't it good to have that freak? You can just publish it anyway and then see what happens.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I had it on for free for a while. But then I sent it to Crystal Publishing, which is in Colorado, and they said they'd do it. So they did a full another edit. So I should have mentioned that back at your first question about the tightness of the narrative. They probably tightened it a little bit more as well. I had a habit of trying to fit as much into a sentence as possible, to make it even more efficient. They kind of slowed it down, added a few more full stops in, and they've been great helping me.
Well, look, I really enjoyed it. So, I think it's really accessible, really enjoyable to read. I like the story, and I'm actually really looking forward to the next one. So when will that be finished?
You're pressuring me.
So your creative juices and process going on right now, when are you finishing
that? Be creative.
Hurry up. Yeah, I want to finish it by the end of the year.
Okay.
So this one got... I finished this one at the end of 2015. Mm-hmm. But it got released this year in April. So I'd like the other one to be edited, ready to go next April. So end of the year.
Great.
Is my deal.
You want April to be your month.
In April then, I think, when I read the second one.
That would be great. I will send you a copy.
So that has been a really interesting and fun chat. Thank you for doing the podcast. We greatly appreciate having you on.
I am actually in my pyjamas, so it's really cool to be able to podcast and just do this from Sydney to Perth in your PJs. It's
I am, by the way, fully clothed, so what we're doing. I wasn't
on that kind of podcast.
It's a peek behind the curtain, if you will, on the podcasting world. Thank you very much, Peter, for your time.
No, thank you for this. It's great.
We're looking forward to talking to you again upon the second release.
You can find Peter Wilson on Facebook, Jack Gregson and the Forgotten Portal, and on our webpage, wordsandnerds.com.
You are listening to Words and Nerds, talking to your favourite authors.